Okay, crew, here we go. So what, about half an hour or so after the final putt of the US Open, that was an epic finish. Great golf course, great week, absolutely loved everything about it. I can't say too much. Too much went wrong this week. It was just an incredible finish. And Luda, you are obviously watching it. I'm here on the other side of the earth. Got up at first thing this morning to watch the, you know, the final sort of 12 holes. Mate, give us your first emotional impressions. What did you think?
Well, yeah, pretty incredible to have Matt Fitzpatrick win the US Amateur there in 2013 and then come back and win the US Open, you know, 30 minutes ago. The same course, two USGA events, which is a big deal. I think Jack Nicklaus is the only guy who's ever done that at the same venue at Pebble Beach. So that's really incredible. But what I took away from it was the best two ball strikers were in the final group. And it came down to those two. And Zalatoris is just an absolute ball-striking machine. I've got a couple of mates who play a lot of golf with him in Dallas, like money games, weeks off. And they say he often hits pins. Like, he will literally hit the pin playing, you know, a casual round. It's a joke how well he hits it. And then Fitzpatrick today hit 17 of 18 greens, Baden, in the final round of the US Open, which I don't care if it's the easiest course in the world, let alone Brookline, which was tough. That's incredible ball striking.
Yeah, it was great. And yeah, as you say, to watch the final two walking up the last hole together as the leaders, it sort of just was the perfect crescendo. And yeah, I mean, Will Zalatoris, let's just quickly talk about him before we get on to Fitzpatrick. Like, this guy just contends every major. It's absolutely incredible. For I mean, almost got into another playoff, two majors in a row. And he's just he's a freak of nature. Like, he obviously competes week in, week out, but like, it's almost he waits for the majors to compete. How did you see the shot he hit into 16, that par three? After, I want to have a quick chat about what happened on 15th, which annoyed the hell out of me, if I'm going to be completely honest. We'll talk about that in a second. But that tee shot off the par three into 16, like, 200 yards, just like he literally had to go for it, carried it up onto that top tier to hit it within 6 feet. I mean, the guy is just an absolute ball striker. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think he putted badly today either. So you can't say his putting was bad. Like, and at times his putting looks quite good. But like, this guy is like, does it get to a point where he starts thinking, oh my God, I just can't get this thing done? Like, what are your impressions?
Well, yeah, I mean, everything you said is spot on. And that shot he hit into that par three, that little sort of buttercut punch up on that back tier was just incredible, because Fitzpatrick striped that. I think it was a 6-iron he hit, and he was posing and it came up a little short. Yeah. And then Zalatoris steps up there and just threads one to, like, you know, 8 feet, which was just such a great golf shot. Mm. But, yeah, you don't want to be the bridesmaid, and runner-up, becoming runner-up can become a habit. What's the old quote? You know, winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. So you want to be winning. You know what? He hits the ball that well day in, day out, Zalatoris, that's the reason I think he's always up there. And you're right, his putting actually looked pretty good today. I will say, I think it was Faraday said, you know, inside 4 feet, it's like he's putting with a rattlesnake in his hands, you know, which isn't great. But outside that, he actually looks pretty good with the putter outside 4 feet.
So true. It's I feel I'm a little bit the same. Like, I don't obviously have what he has, like, inside 4 feet, but like, give me a 14 to 20 footer or something, and it's a totally different feel. Like, more relaxed, you just sort of let it happen. So I could totally appreciate where he's coming from. I remember, like, I don't know, do you remember Peter Lonnard? Like, Lonnard was better from like 45 feet than he was from 3 feet, sort of thing. Some people are better. You know, you take sort of the expectation out of it, you don't get so precise, and you just get a vibe for the thing rather than thinking, holy shit, this is like a 3-footer and that's where the hole is, and this has to roll directly over these, you know, these couple of grains of sand effectively. So yeah, he obviously just lets it go a little bit. But yeah, just getting back to the thing that annoys the hell out of me, and I think it's because I wanted Willie Z to win as well, if I'm going to be completely honest. But on 15, Fitzpatrick hitting first, gets up, blasts something straight right. And this is obviously, a few people have been talking about this all week, which is, you know, the temporary immovable obstructions. And coming down the stretch there, you could effectively, on a couple of the holes, including 18, just blast it wherever you want. You're probably better off hitting it into the grandstands like Rory yesterday. Like Rory snap hooked that thing so far left, you know, and he gets like 40 meters or, you know, 50 yards of relief from a grandstand. But anyway, getting back to what happened on 15, Fitzpatrick blasts this thing straight right into the crowd and doesn't yell four, right? Not only not yells four, but he's smiling about, oh, this is all great. Like misses the fairway by 40 yards. If everyone gets out of the way, maybe it goes even further into the, but it doesn't. It smashes straight into someone, falls down into the most perfect lie. And then Willie Z hits something like 15 yards off the fairway, buried, like can't even, hardly gets it out, hits it left into a trap. Two-shot swing, right? Two-shot swing with three holes to go. Yeah, as you can tell, that just like really gets me annoyed that that stuff, that you can be rewarded for a terrible shot and actually not calling for and sort of using someone or humans as like a barrier to keep them in play. But I might be overplaying it probably. What do you think, Loda?
Well, that's the old Arnie's Army, you know. Palmer used to sometimes hit it into the crowd on purpose because it's all trampled down and it's fine. And Tiger, obviously, you know, biggest crowds in history, Tiger would often maybe miss a fairway and have a good lie because there's just a million people trampling the rough down, right? So, but I'm with you. It doesn't really make sense when you hit a great shot, maybe 2 yards offline, it's buried, and then your playing partner sprays one, you know, 40 yards offline, so a perfect lie. And as you said, that was a huge moment. But in championship golf, there is a bit of luck involved. There's a few things that happen, and it went, the chips fell towards Fitzpatrick today, right?
Yeah, totally. I know. I'm probably overplaying it a little bit, and I think, because I really do want to see Willie win one of these, because I think, you know, he could be an all-timer. So, but look, he's super young. And look, let's quickly talk about Fitzpatrick and just the rise of Matt Fitzpatrick, which has been like, it's been incremental, I suppose you would say. Like, obviously, he won the US AM, you know, I think it's a decade ago now at the same venue. He's just continually got better and better. He's been winning on the European Tour, which obviously, you know, it's not the US Tour. It just isn't. So he would have and hasn't yet won until today on the US Tour. So would have been thinking to himself, can I get this done? But what we've seen, obviously, is this huge improvement in speed off the tee, Luda, which is just incredible and pretty rare. That, you know, obviously we saw Bryson do it, but has consequently got injured and, you know, it's pretty rare, but it's pretty incredible to see what he's been able to do with that speed.
Well, totally. And I didn't realize this, but Matt Fitzpatrick writes down every single shot he hits. Like he'll do this tonight. He writes down and journals every shot he hits. He documents all his practice sessions. He's the biggest pros pro you'll ever meet. And I couldn't believe he was hitting drives past Zalatoris today. To me, that's just insane. But you're right. He's done that. It's called the stack system, I think it's called. I think Sasha McKenzie and Chris Como's involved in that one. And I think for length, it's obviously great. And I will say this. He has been doing it for, I think, 2, maybe 3 years.
Right.
And I read a quote about a lot of people, and as you know, whether it's swing methods, whatever it is, someone might try something for a little bit and then go, yeah, it doesn't work. He's stuck to it for years.
Right.
And I think it's finally kicking in and he's hitting it, you know, 20, 30 further.
Yeah.
But it's not like he's just done this for a month. He's done this for 2 years, this training, the speed training.
Yeah.
And what an absolute, you know, you got to take your hat off to him. What a champion for doing that and sticking to it. Mm. And to see him hitting it past Zalatoris today, I was like, whoa, that's crazy, you know.
And it doesn't seem to be, there's no apparent massive swing changes is the thing that is cool about it, I think. So he's increased speed without actually radically changing his motion. It even seems to have the exact same tempo. It doesn't look any faster, I don't think. Like he's always had a fast tempo the way he swings it. But like when you look at him swinging up the tee, it's like, well, it looks literally identical to what it looked like 6 years ago. But he's hitting it. I think he's increased his average ball speed by 6 miles an hour or something. And he averages 119 miles an hour or 120 miles an hour off the tee with driver, which puts him into which puts him into the top 50 in on tour. And I think 3 years ago, he was like in the bottom 25 or something like that. So he's literally, he's added 10 miles an hour of club head speed over the past few years. So just really quickly, I don't know if you know much about this stack system, and I'm, you know, I do know a little bit about it, but not a whole lot. But Sasha McKenzie, obviously one of the preeminent, you know, biomechanists out there. What he's sort of done is taken what Super Speed do, right, which Super Speed Training came out about 6 years ago, and effectively it's overspeed training. I don't know if I've definitely got a set somewhere. I don't know where they are, but essentially all it is like, it's a very light graphite shaft, just like a driver, and then they have varying degrees of weight in the end without a head on it. And what you're supposed to do is like slowly generate lots of speed with a lighter feeling club than you would usually use, and you stand there and just basically try and grip it as hard as you can over a long period of time. It's called overspeed training, and then it translates into, you know, longer distances when you hit it. As you say, Luder, I think the key is like you've got to stick with it. Like anything, you've got to do it over a period of time. Now, what the stack system is, he's basically taken that system. He's got one club, but it's actually got it reads data. So this is what like Super Speed doesn't do, right? Super Speed's literally just graphite shafts with a little weight on the end of it. And what it does is actually it connects to an app, and it tells you what speeds you're doing, and it's slow, and it spits out programs for you, right, based on data that it's collecting. So very, very sophisticated, and no doubt, if you're willing to stick with it, as we said, Luder, an amazing product. So, yeah, big shout-out to Sacco, and, yeah, I know Chris does like promoting it, so not sure exactly what his association with. I know he knows Sacco really well. So, yeah, congratulations to Matt. Look, as you say, records every shot. He is, you know, he's the opposite of an artist to a degree, isn't he? He is like a mechanic, and just he gets it done.
No, definitely. And we got to talk about his short game, because he's number one in strokes gained around the greens on the tour, and he chips cross-handed.
Wow.
I remember Peter Senior on the Aussie. He had I'm not going to say the Y word, because I think it spreads like a disease, that Y word.
Yeah.
That Zalatoris has with the short putting. It's contagious. So, but I guess Peter Senior battled that and then went to the cross-handed and fixed him. But the thing about cross-handed chipping is, and if someone's out there listening and they're really struggling with, you know, dumping the club or fatting them, it's really hard to have too much shaft lean when you're cross-handed. Which the pitching's great. You don't want too much shaft lean for pitching, right? So I guess he did it as a drill, maybe. I know Pete Cowan gets a lot of his guys doing that, I think. And anyway, he does it on the course, and he's the number one pitcher on tour statistically right now. But it's incredible to see a guy go to cross-handed for like a 20-yard pitch. You know?
It's unbelievable because, I mean, what's not the easiest part of it is making the technical transition. The hard bit is going out there in the US Open and doing it and feeling like, all right, I know exactly how far this thing's going to carry, roll out. Like having that feel that the other way around with right hand low, you've been practicing for 25, 26, 27 years, and then you go to another feel, which must be like literally starting all over again in your mind in terms of judgment and things like that. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, so just getting on to the technical side of things. So it sort of encourages a bit more of a set and then an unset. Is that what you're saying, Luder, where it doesn't, you don't lag it as much sort of coming in and hold and jam the front edge into the ground?
Yeah, exactly. So, again, for good players, it's a good player problem. Guys who really know how to flush the golf ball with pitching, you know, you want, you know, without getting too technical, you want to take ball speed off. So you actually want it to be soft and spinny and touch, you know. And so you don't want to be, you know, compressing and leaning the shafts and all this great stuff. That's why golf stuff, because, you know, to flush an iron like Zalatoris, that's exactly what you want to do. But if you want to have a simple pitch with some spin around the greens, you want kind of more neutral shaft and maybe, you know, club face a little more open, a little softer kind of shot. So anyway, I think the cross-handed really helps with that. Mm. And Fitzpatrick's literally doing it, you know, in tournaments, and he's ranked number one, which is kind of hard to believe, to be honest. But he's the US Open champ, and it was pretty cool to see him do that.
Well, he didn't even have to chip once today, did he? Like, what green did he miss? Do you remember what green?
I'm trying to remember. I guess he had 17. I can't remember which one he missed, but he put on an absolute ball striking clinic. You know, that makes life a lot easier. But when he does miss on tour, he's, as I said, he's ranked number one right now. So you can't argue You can't argue that.
I look forward to seeing how it goes in Britain. You know, I think that I could imagine, like, you know, with fluffy, you know, rough, like at Brookline where it sort of rolls in, you can get away with a fair bit of stuff in there, I would say. You know what I mean? Like, I always used to watch Tim Clark. I don't know if you remember how bad Tim Clark's chipping was, but he would only ever go and chip, play at courses that had, you know, sort of 6 inches of rough around them because he could actually get the ball out, right? So it'll be really interesting. At St Andrews, when you've got to nip it off concrete, essentially, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But, yeah, incredible win. And, look, he is he deserves everything, you know, that he's getting right now because he's just he's worked relentlessly. And, you know, he really is sort of the next phase of the young. Probably England have got, like, they've had a great 10 years, you would say, obviously, or 15 years, you know, starting with Westwood and going through Poulter and everyone, really, Fleetwood and
Justin Rose.
But they probably haven't had a lot of young guys sort of coming through recently. So he's obviously, he's now doing that, and it'll be interesting to see if he inspires a few more. Okay, mate, so let's just quickly go through this. Let's go through the leaderboard now. So obviously Scotty Scheffler will probably be kicking himself, I reckon, after yesterday on the par 3 11th. I mean, did you see that shot? He tried to knock it down and hit it literally sort of 20 yards over the back of the green up against the really long fescue-y stuff, makes double. And probably from that point, he lost the event because he then goes on to bogey the next, I think, and loses a few more shots over the next few holes, holds on to it, but maybe that was when he lost the Open.
Yeah, he was always slightly behind. I mean, today he got off to an absolute flyer, right? What was he, 3 under through 4 or something crazy? But, and look, he had a putt on 18. He hit two incredible shots into 18, and I thought he hit a great putt, just didn't quite break. But, you know, loses by a shot, obviously the Masters champion. He's the best player in the world. He's the real deal. So I thought, you know, you're right. He had a couple errors, but, you know, Rory had a couple, one yesterday, one the day before, where he threw a couple shots away, similar thing. But yeah, Scheffler, what a player, man. He's up there every week, it seems now.
It's incredible. And the way he goes about it is like nothing I've ever seen. He almost, like, this is going to sound, he looks uncoordinated some of the times, if you ask me. Like, he's obviously a supreme athlete and gets it done, but sometimes he looks literally uncoordinated, but he makes, like, even like when he stubs some of those chips, he's got like a straight rider. I don't know how he does it half the time, but he's sort of like, I don't know, like the thing I love about golf and golf swings, right, is that there's a lot of Norman there, right? There's a lot of throwbacks. Oh, yeah. Like even Willie Z, I don't know, both of them are big lean backers, you know what I mean? They both, you know, love, you know, increasing their shape and hanging back. You know, for years we've sort of been on this stay over it, forward and around, hands in close, swing left sort of thing. But, you know, those two are sort of quite the opposite. They're going back with their top, hanging back a long way. This is what I love about it. It's like, okay, are we all going to be swinging like Greg Norman again in the near future, sort of like, and Scotty Scheffler? Because it's probably very different to the model that is being taught a little bit at the moment.
Well, that's true. But I will say, if you know, a lot of people, I guess, I've seen on Instagram and in general, a lot of people don't like early extension, which I agree with. I think you don't want to do it if possible. But, you know, Scheffler and Norman's footwork is the anti-early extension. You know, that's – it's so, like, as much – if you really know the golf swing, you look at Scheffler's footwork and go, it looks weird, but it's actually not that bad. It's probably better than going the other way, which is, you know, humping the ball and having that right foot way and knee up, crowding the ball, no room.
Yep.
And, you know, as you said, Greg Norman, Rory actually does it with driver sometimes too. Rory's got that right foot sort of, you know, kicking back. It's almost like a hockey slap shot. You know, if you watch a hockey guy hit a slap shot, that right foot actually goes behind the left, you know.
Yeah.
And the hip's still clear, but it's the opposite of, you know, that crazy early extension. Scheffler's obviously a great mind, great player. Yep. And whatever he's doing, it's working. That's for damn sure, right?
He has a great mind. Like, you couldn't be more right. Like, his mind is just incredible. Like, his attitude after yesterday, I saw her in all of the press conferences. He's just, you know, I mean, this guy's 25. Like, we've got 15 years of this. It'll be so interesting to see where he goes. You know, I mean, he could have so easily won. I thought we were going to have a three-way playoff there at one stage. Like when Fitzpatrick hit it in the trap left, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be like, he's probably going to make bogey from there. Cause I thought he was more tucked in behind the island.
So did I.
Yeah. And I was like, if he makes bogey from there, this is, you know, and then Willie makes par. We've got a three-way playoff with Scheffler. And I thought this is going to be awesome. And then obviously Fitz hit that ridiculous little carving shot out of the trap. So pretty crazy. So yeah, just keep going through. Unbelievably interesting week. I think sort of Hideki shot a round of the week, the lowest round. He had a 65 today, I think. Well, he did. He had 65 to finish at 3 under. So he was 2 under at the start of the day. And then Colin Morikawa, like, weird week, super weird week, finishes at 2 under. He had 11 shots better today than yesterday. He had a 77 yesterday, I think, and 76. If I've got my numbers right here, had a 66 today, 77 yesterday. Like, that's crazy, isn't it? And he's finished, you know, he's finished four shots off. I don't know if you heard much of the talk, but he doesn't know which way it's sort of going at the moment. He's grown up hitting fades all of his life, and now he's hitting little baby draws. Where do you feel like he is with his game at the moment? I thought, you know, a year ago, I'm like, this guy's going to win like 15 majors, and he hasn't been great really for the past 6 months.
Yeah, well, if I put my playing cap on, I totally get what he's saying. And I mean, he's just a fader if there ever is one. He loves to fade the ball. And I saw at the start of this week, he's lost his fade. And again, for a good player, if you love to fade it and the ball's not fading, which is usually a double cross or whatever it is, it's a game of golf is very difficult. So he has not been on, but I guess this week he found something. I will say this. I was at the Memorial Tournament 2 weeks ago. I watched Colin two holes, and he did not miss a shot. It was just a clinic. So, you know, his bad is still very good. But if you love to fade the ball and it's not fading, it is not much fun, and that's what he's going through. So I'm sure him and Rick, who's his coach, great guy, I'm sure they'll figure it out. But look, if he can, you know, come top five in a major, not having his best, that just shows you how great he is. What's he got, two majors now and a bunch of wins?
Yeah, exactly. And then goes back next. The British Open is only 3 weeks away. Like, so he's
at St. Andrews.
It's at St. Andrews. So he's going back to defend his title. So won at St. George's last year, obviously. So, that'll be really interesting to see him over there. Probably he's a, you know, I don't think it was windy last year, but I would imagine he's a great wind player. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully, I mean, maybe after today, he's like, righto, maybe he got his fade back today. So we'll wait and see. Because you went the other way, didn't you? You grew up with a sizable draw and then turned it into a baby fade over time.
I always say the fade gets paid, you know. So There's no question. For a good player, if you've got that fade in check, it makes the game of golf a lot easier. And if you watch the coverage now, you watch Brooks, you watch DJ, you watch all these great players, typically you'll see that fade ball fly. You'll see Rory and Adam Scott draw it, but guess what? They draw it with that beautiful body rotation. It's not like they're stalling and flipping the hands, you know what I mean? So they draw it, in my opinion, the right way, like Fleetwood. But in general, I just think the fade, you know, look at Trevino, Niklaus, you look at Ben Hogan, Tiger later in his career, They all end up going to that little baby fade, you know? Mm.
So true. Yeah, I love I feel like I've actually started hitting it quite well again. I'm quite excited about my game at the moment, Luda. We'll have to – hopefully we can meet up in America at some stage in the very near future. But I'm trying to make it go the other way. And I feel like in the past when I've tried to fade it, I always neck it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I've never been able to flush fade it, if you know what I mean, like right out of the middle of the face and it goes. But I've got that at the moment where it's coming out of the middle of the golf club and moving – just, you know, it doesn't even start left. It just falls right sort of thing. And that's exciting because I'll be happy to play with that for the rest of my life, to be honest, because as we're just discussing, the old turnover, the Apple turnover, it's no good sometimes, I think, you know.
Oh, if that thing starts going left, no matter how good or whatever your handicap is, makes the game too hard because it goes further into the trouble. It does. It hooks further into the trouble. And that little baby fade really is so reliable. I think a lot of the greats do it. As I said, Rory's one of the few great players who draws it. Scheffler hits it both ways, but the more you see that pro tracer now on TV, you see more and more ball flights go that slight left to right, especially off the TV driver.
And it, yeah, and coming into it just falls so much softer coming into greens, doesn't it? Like you just get, you can hit it higher, you can hit it higher and it lands softer, you know. But I think, you know, growing up, you just assume you're supposed to move it right to left so much of the time, you know. So it's, yeah, I think for a lot of people out there, and now when it, you know, this is going off topic a little bit, but some people can try and fade it the wrong way. Like what you want to do is try and fade it with the face a little bit, that you don't, you really, you don't want to fade it with like a massive, you know, path change. You know, that's where people get in trouble. So you can still shallow it and fade it, right? So it starts straight, maybe a mil left, and then falls to the right. That's what you're looking for in terms of a fade. You don't want something that's starting, you know, because the path is, you know, 8 degrees left or something. You don't want it starting way left and then cutting way back, because that's where your double crosses and stuff come into it. So, and the contact's pretty hard because it does steepen the attack angle probably a little bit too much. But anyway, let's not get into that. All right, let's talk about your favorite man, and we're just talking about him. Where's Rory at? What was that, a good week? Is that all he's got? Is that
well, your favorite swing, right, baby?
What's
your
that?
Favorite swing, bro?
Yeah, I love your it. Swing. Exactly. Love it. I'm the only.
Well, I'll tell you what. What did he finish? Fifth? Did he finish fifth again? Another top five in a major like every other one.
Yeah, four shots off. Had one under.
And he played great at the Canadian Open, obviously won.
Yeah.
Look, he's just so talented. It's ridiculous. He makes the game look easy. There's no question. He's the most talented player in golf. And he was not quite on all cylinders this week, but. You know what? Another top five in a major. Anyone else had to be like the greatest week of their life, but for him, it's like a bad week because he's that good. You know what I'm saying? But well, it's been 8 years now. 8 years he's been majorless.
Yeah.
And he's not getting any younger, and he's so good. I mean, I say this in a complimentary way, that he's got to start peeling off some majors. You know, he really does, in my opinion. Yeah. Either that or he maybe has to go to the live tour. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we can talk about that in a second, but... yeah, look, he had the best putting. I think he putted the best out of everyone all week, you know, and he gets – so you would hope that if you have your best putting week or you win the putting, especially with, you know, how good a ball strike he apparently is, you would win. You know what I mean? That's – I feel like he was revving at 8,000 revs and, you know, got almost everything out of his game, and he still finished four off. So, look, we'll wait and see what happens. But, see, I think – but what you were talking about, without getting too technical, but we can – so yesterday, Rory hit that sniping hook, obviously off the tee on 18, but because that's what his pattern does, right? He's a big hooker.
Sure.
Basically, he's a hooker. So it was so – when he had that relief and he hit that shot off out of the rough on 18, snap hooked it around the tree onto the green, if there was an Olympic sport which was called hooking it, his pattern would be perfect, right? You know, and so when he hits that shot, I'm not that surprised, because it's like, well, of course he's, because I think his arms get trapped way behind him, like so far behind him. Yeah. It's hard to, how do you fade that? Do you know what I mean? Like they're so far behind him, they swing out to the right. Anyway, so I think that he can't move to that fade. That's what's hard about his pattern, right? And why I believe that's why he's not a good wedge player. That's why he can't hit those little knockdowns, because he swings, you know, with lots of turn and his arms. Like, if you watch, sometimes I look at him from, you know, side on, it's like, cannot believe how far his arms are around behind his body, and then they're trapped, right? So he obviously then has to get lots of this coming. But anyway, so I think that's where he might struggle for the rest of his career. Like, if he could do what DJ has done, what kept these guys' arms are up here, you know, Zalatoris's arms, Thomas's arms, they're all up here, right? And that's why they can fall in front of it and they can all go to that fade. He can never – he tried it recently. He went with Pete Cowan and he said, I'm going to fade with driver, and it lasted like two rounds, and he's like, oh, my God, I can't do that, right? So anyway, that's my little rant, and that's what makes me worry about Rory, right, is that I think he's technically flawed, right, in that – which I know you hate to hear, and everyone disagrees with me. I know, well, not everyone. Some people do agree with me, but I think that's why for the rest of his career, he is going to have to get absolutely everything right on the day for him to win, like a major sort of thing. So, look, I love him, and I think he's amazing for the game, and I would have loved to see him win and all those things. But we'll wait and see. Okay, so sorry, Luda. I know you love it, but.
no, look, he'll be fine. I think I don't think he'll lose any sleep over that analysis. But he look, you're right. Like, he does get a little deep. He loves that big high draw. And I think he's one of the greatest of all time.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, but we'll wait and see. So, look, good luck to it. We'll wait and see. So, yeah, a couple of other names. Like, John Rowan had a really bad day. That was super disappointing. I thought he was going to actually make a run at it. And then a couple of fellow Aussies actually finished okay. So Scotty had 2 under today, and so did Leach. So Adam Scott finished at 2 over, and he ended up finished tied 14. So yeah, I mean, there's a couple of great stories in there, but let's get on to the golf course itself really quickly, Luna. Like, impressions. I think, like, it's so funny, US Opens, isn't it? Like, it's always on the edge of, you know, people are always really angry, really happy with the layout. There, it's too hard and fast. It's not hard enough. Like, what was your impression from the week? And is this the kind of golf course we want to be playing all the time?
I think it was perfect. What was the winning score? 5? Was it 5?
Six.
6. So I think that right there says it all. I mean, these are the greatest players in the world. And again, anyone listening to this, if these guys came to your golf course and played 4 rounds, it would probably be 20 under plus. Like, that's how good they all are.
100%.
So for them to go and shoot only 6 is the winning score, that's perfect for a US Open. I think the USGA for a few years there lost their way, and they went to Chambers Bay and Erin Hills and these places, and you know, the different style of golf courses and all of that. And I remember they asked Tiger Woods a question. They said, "What do you think?" And he goes, "I don't know why they're doing this. It should be old school golf.
Yeah.
Fairways are kind of pinched in, thick rough, greens are quick. You got to drive it straight. If not, you got to go play golf. And usually, you know, even to sort of 8 under wins." And that's what this week was. And I think it was perfect for a US Open. I mean, it's not the Masters. It's not the British. It is the US Open. It's got an identity, and I think this is the perfect identity. Old school, great classic course, thick rough, fast greens. Let the guys go do battle.
Totally. And interesting golf holes as well, I think, you know. So not just all about length and rough. Like, you know, I think really, really cool. Like, I loved 11, you know, the par 3, 11, yeah, where obviously Scotty made double yesterday and Rory missed the green today, and like that was playing 104 yards today, right? 104 yards, and guys were making bogeys and doubles, and not many birdies. Like, why don't we have more of that stuff in you know, open tournament? I think that would just be so much cooler. And yeah, I just think that it's just, and this is just the thing that LIV will never be able to sort of compete with unless they're able somehow to get into these golf courses, which I don't see Brookline allowing LIV onto their tournament anytime soon.
Brookline's like the anti-LIV. Brookline, exactly. LIV are like the opposites.
Exactly. So, you know, this is the thing that the PGA Tour is always going to have, you know, over LIV, I would imagine, is that LIV, especially for the next 5 years, they're not getting onto any of these amazing old tracks. You know, like, I kind of felt like this tournament or this course, like, with less rough and cut away a bit more, is sort of like a sandbelty course. It kind of felt like, you know, felt like that to me. So yeah, really, really cool to watch. And yeah, now on to the British Open at St Andrews for the 150th, which is going to be super cool. But I suppose the other elephant in the room is sort of, okay, obviously no LIV players play well. That doesn't surprise me at all, because so many of them are obviously past their use by date, but I mean, also probably would have had a horrible week, to be perfect. Like, DJ wouldn't have been loving this week, I don't think, you know, just based on people's reactions and stuff like that. So, but in 2 weeks' time, they're in America. So this is the first event is going to be played at Pumpkin Ridge up in Portland. Do you know, I mean, who knows what's literally, it could even be tonight, now the event's over, or tomorrow, more announcements of who's going. Like, have you got any inside word, or what's your take on what's going to be happening over the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I know there's at least 3 more big-ish names going. I think there's one really big one. That I've heard from the inside. A buddy of mine's kind of working for LIV, and he's like, there's some big stuff coming, big announcements. But I heard one, I think there's one top 10 player, the rumor is he's going.
Wow.
Obviously Bryson's going, Pat Perez is going,
Patrick Reed.
And then I hear there's a couple of really big names. And you know what? I think it's just the start. I think the trend's gonna keep doing that. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting, I tell you that much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think when you look at today's leaderboard, though, it does feel like the new breed of major contenders, doesn't it? You know, with obviously Scheffler, Zalatoris, Fitzpatrick, Morikawa, McIlroy is still there. He's not going anywhere. I still think obviously the majors and the PGA Tour is going to be okay, but mate, it's just going to be crazy to see. I think the next 2 weeks are going to be amazing. Like, I think we're going to hear some really big names drop. And then, obviously, we're only 3 weeks out from the British Open. So by the time we get to the BO, you know, who knows what's going to happen over the next 3 weeks. And then they all come back together again after Pumpkin Ridge. And, yeah, I mean, does it just all settle down and we just move on with things and we realise we've got two slightly diluted, tours and we just sort of move on with it kind of thing?
Well, the big thing is the British, I'm sure they won't, but will they say, can the live guys play?
Yeah.
And there's no announcement yet. And the big one, the elephant in the room here in the big golf world is Augusta. So, will they let all the guys play, especially they got seven past champions playing live now?
Yeah.
And that's the big decision. I think the tour and the whole golf world's waiting for that decision because that carries the most weight, to be honest, is Augusta. And, so does the British Open, of course. So if they let everyone play, I think this LIV Tour is going to be rocking and rolling. And as you said, you might have two tours kind of fighting for it, but you got one with bottomless pockets. So it's hard to compete with that. At the end of the day, it is a job. It's not a hobby for these guys, you know. So usually who pays the most, that's where the guys will go.
Yeah, I think that the Masters has got a huge advantage in that it's not until April next year. So to be perfectly honest, you know, maybe the PGA Tour and LIV figure something out. I don't know if that's possible, but, like, maybe they do decide, okay, we're going to work together. These guys can play on it. So the Masters can, fortunately for them, sit back probably. Like, they don't have to do anything for 6 months, really, do they?
Correct.
So they're at a huge advantage. And, but that will be – I mean, as we discussed on the last pod, like there's already six guys or something like that that are on the LIV Tour that are past major champions and Masters champions. So, you know, there's a spanner in the works right there.
Do you think the British Open will let everyone play from LIV?
I think they've got to, don't they? Like, I think just like the USGA said, look, you know, these were the criteria to get into the event. How can we change that right now, sort of thing? You know, these people have all qualified. I'd be amazed if they did it. And, I mean, once again, I think they're a little bit off the hook as well. The USGA have let everyone play. And, look, it sort of went off without a hitch. No one really contended. Okay, not a problem. The Royal and Ancient will probably do the same. And then it gives them another year to sit back and try and figure it out. I think probably banning people this soon is, I don't know, it's just probably making a lot more trouble than what it's worth, I would imagine.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting, I saw Keith Pelly, who's the head of the European Tour. I think I read this correctly. He's going to allow the LIV guys to play Europe.
Right.
So that's a big deal. That's a massive deal. So I think Dustin just applied for membership for the European Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they'll be able to get their world ranking points and play all the big events in Europe. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But that might be the smartest thing he's done. The European Tour might have just got a hell of a lot stronger from this decision. So
couldn't agree more, which would have really pissed off the US, the PGA Tour, I reckon. I reckon those two tours would have been speaking to each other and said, we've got to do everything we can to stop this tour. If one of the things we can do is not allow those guys onto our tour because then they don't get world rankings and then we can slowly, starve them of oxygen in that sort of sense. And now that the DP World Tour has said, come on in, it's like, well, it's almost there's no stopping them now because everyone, you know, what's stopping people, more people moving from the PGA Tour knowing, oh, my God, this is great, I can go and play on the European Tour, play in Dubai, you know, go and play these beautiful courses over in Europe, still have my, still be able to get my world ranking points, make my way into the majors. Yeah, I reckon that would have really pissed off the PGA Tour that the DP World Tour did that. So, I agree. I hope, because I do feel like the European Tour, the DP World Tour, same thing, it feels like it's weakened a bit, hasn't it, or a lot, probably over the past 5-6 years. So it would be great if it did create a little bit more relevance there. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be this balance of, well, how do we maintain these relationships without cannibalizing ourselves and grow each? So, yeah, it's going to be a pretty interesting dance from here on in, big guy. But, mate, anything else you wanted to say really about the US Open in particular, or talk to us about what's happening with you? I love hearing what's happening. Yeah, how are you playing at the moment? Are you flushing it?
Yeah, I'm playing an outing tomorrow, a big outing actually, and then I've got a pro-am thing later this week. Yeah, it's okay. It's I tell you, on the range, it's like a clinic, you know. It's Tiger on the range. You just got to take it to the course. So, no, the game feels good, and I had a client in town the last 2 days I was coaching, and he's hitting it great, so that was fun. But and then working with a few pros, you know, a couple club pros and another guy who, you know, really getting better and better. So I'm enjoying it. How about you, man? What's been going on?
Just everything in Skillist world, you know, just building this thing, which is great fun. And, like, it's just so many – I mean, the great thing about the platform, which is obviously also like takes up a lot of time, there's so many stakeholders. You know, we've got close to 30,000 monthly active students on the platform. We've got, you know, hundreds of weekly active coaches that are teaching people all around the world. And there's a lot of people to keep happy, which is great because everyone's loving it. Like, I mean, you can look at the reviews we get everywhere, like in the App Store, it's 4.9, you know, after that platform's. Platforms existed for, you know, close to 7 years, and we've got a 4.9 rating in the App Store sort of thing. So everyone loves it, but it's, yeah, it's just, it's, and there's, you know, the thing I love doing as well is like thinking ahead and creating like cool brand partnerships. We've got some really cool stuff lined up in the future, which is going to, you know, like I'm always thinking like, how can we push coaching forward? How can we make people better? How can we transform the old model, which hasn't really worked that well for anyone, to be perfectly honest, unless you've got an abundance of funds and you can have someone like you, Luda, literally, you know, almost caddy for them and do everything for them and shadow them in everything they do. That's just not possible for the average person. And to be honest, like obviously the geographical barriers just make it impossible, the time barriers, like. So, yeah, so I'm always thinking, all right, where can we go that's going to completely revolutionize that? So that's what takes up a lot of my time as well, mate. So, it's all good fun, but hopefully on the road maybe in a month or something like that. So we definitely need to get together and at the very least have a hit and a couple of beers and, I want to see that ball fly to yours, mate. I want to see that baby fly.
I tell you what, it was pretty good today. It was pretty good today. Today I shot 2 under, so 2 under today. Cool. But first time I've seen the golf course. A guy that I coach took me out there, so it was fun. I hit a lot of good shots. I working on a little Zalatoris through the ball right now. So
really, really
getting just the a little bit.
I mean, just really quickly in closing, like, not many guys cup it like that coming in, is it? How's that transition with his left wrist where he goes into – he actually gets it more open in transition, whereas the trend at the moment is like, well, how do you get into flexion and how do you shut the face on the way down as much as possible?
Well, my favorite of all time is like Zalatoris, Ben Hogan. Hogan was the same way.
Totally. Well, this is what I've said in, you know, previous – pods is like, I like an open face going down, not a shut one. You know, open, if it's slightly open coming in, there's so many more shots you can hit. Like, the shutter it is coming down, the lower it launches, the harder it is to spin a ball. Like, there's so many people assume because it's open, as it falls, it's going to slice. But it's if you go around with your body with an open face, and that's what Hogan said, he wanted to go around with an open face. So it's open, but he's shutting it around with the body. He's not trying to shut it with his wrists and shut the club face. So really,
Hogan was wide open. Hogan was wide open. So Zalatoris. Sneed was a little open. A lot of the great players in history aren't that closed. Obviously, Dustin is now, as you said, and Morikawa and a lot of these guys play with a strong face. But a lot of the GOATs had a different look. But they were shallow. I will say that. The shaft was always shallow coming down.
Totally. Shallow and open. That's what I love. But anyway, it's definitely not what I love. It's about what works for everyone. So, Luda, Really cool chat. Great review, mate. And everyone, we've promised each other that we're going to lock this pod in every Sunday night. We're going to be doing it. So you'll get a great review on what's happened on tour that week and then all things that are happening in the skills world. And don't forget that if you want to learn from the great David Luteris, former US Tour player, unbelievable ball striker, plays off +7 at his own club, absolute player, and is a really, really astute coach and is like rapidly evolving into one of the best Instagrammers I've seen. So make sure you follow him on Instagram at Luteris, and make sure you learn from him on Skillist if you want a lesson from one of the best ball strikers on earth outside of Willie Z.
Love it, brother. Love it. Yeah, sign up, guys. Let's go. Love it.
All right, team, thank you so much. And remember that if you enjoyed this conversation, like, share, do all that stuff, and send it on to your friends who you think might enjoy it. But until next week, we will see you there.